I want to thank the powers that be here in the yeshiva for allowing me to give thought this lovely Sunday morning. I have never been to Thoughts. I do not know what Thoughts are. So I've taken liberty of thinking that Thoughts are of Hartstein's pet peeves. So that I'm going to speak about this morning. I also have absolutely no idea how long I'm supposed to go, so I'll do whatever I please. I want to touch on both parshas. It's always a difficult when you're on a Sunday. So do you speak about next week's parsha, or do you speak about parshas Vayechid? So I'll do both. I was always struck at the beginning, really the middle of the parsha somewhat, where Yosef is, as we know, Yosef is getting the brachas for his sons, and he thinks his father doesn't really know what's going on. Really, to me, the height of chutzpah, where the father is Yaakov Avinu. You know, he's like, Dad, come, you know, you old geezer, come on, what, you don't know what's going on over here, right? And this is like quite interesting. Like, Yaakov should have said to him, excuse me, where have you been for the last few dozen years? I know what's going on. And the brachas that he gives Ephraim and Manasseh are actually Yisimcha Elokim Ephraim and Manasseh. This is what we bless our children with every single Friday night. And so he knew what was going on. And then furthermore, when he starts to give the brachas to the Shiftei Ka, to the Shvatim, we see how unique these brachas are. And I always was very much in awestruck, and how accurate they say that the brachas of Yaakov Avinu were. And as we know, many of us have seen in shuls or on paroches, or right, you have the shvatim and what each of them are. And you know right away, there's mamish one picture, you understand. Dan has the snake, and you know Yisachar, right, and Zvulun with the ship, and Gur Ariya Yehuda with the right, and Binyamin Zit, right? And he understood. So it's a very interesting comment by the Or HaChaim, which the Svarno also says, which is a little bit different than Rashi, on the Parsha. And this specifically before he gives the brachas out. So it says that the way that he v'yavarech osam, ish asher kivirchoto beirechotam. So he gave them a bracha according to their level. So he writes Or HaChaim, perish, haroilai. Kifi bichinas nishmaso, kifi ma'asav. Yaakov Avinu was what we call an unbelievable baal pichus. He was able to look inside of somebody's soul, and he knew exactly what the bracha should be, what was right for them. He looked in their soul. He knew their ma'asav. He knew what they did. Ki yesh lecha das, ki hanefashot kol echad yesh lam bichina ma'ala. That he knew the ma'alos of each person. He was able to take out of them and say, you're going to be good at this. You're going to be good at this. The famous relationship between Yisachar and Zvulun. One will work, one will learn. They'll have this great relationship. He understood that. And that was a tremendous midah that Yaakov Avinu was able to see in each of them. Who would follow the kahuna? Who would become the Shevet of Malchus? That was an unbelievable thing that Yaakov Avinu shows us. And that's really what one of the pet peeves I want to speak about. And that is that I think in the generation that I'm certainly not living in, but the generation that you're living in, so we very much like to discount ourselves and say, listen, this is the best that I can do. This is the best that I can be. You know why? Because that's what my doctor told me. That's what my psychologist, my psychiatrist told me. That's what my parents told me. Nebuch, even worse, maybe that's what my teachers told me. You'll never amount to anything. Well, what are you doing? Right? There's a famous, I'm going to quote in the Beis Medrash, so there's a famous actor that when he received, I think it was the Academy Award, so his big announcement was Pasha. His announcement was, you know, when you got up there and you have that a minute and a half when they start playing the music, so he said, and to Mrs. So-and-so, who told me I would never amount to be anything, and then he used an explicit, followed by you, which even they had a blackout. But he said that, you see? See, Hershey, you know quite well what he said.
So,
he used to say it in cheer sometimes. So,
so
we have to recognize that, especially when we're spending our year in Israel, we look in ourselves, we hope that our Rebbeim can look into us. One of the boys sitting here told me that when he was interviewed from another yeshiva, he very much decided that that might be his yeshiva he was going to. Why? Because he said that that Rosh Yeshiva looked into his soul and knew him like this. He was like Eloi Yaakov Avinu. And for that reason, he wanted to go to that yeshiva. So you know what I said to him? Ooh, it's very scared. Why you do this? But that Rebbe was able to do that. He was able to look inside. It's an amazing midah. If you're right, it's an amazing midah. It's not an amazing midah when you sell somebody short and you say to them, well, you know, you're on medication already. Listen, do the best you can. A few stories. Let's take a break. A few stories. Story number one. There are people we know, probably the best and the brightest, who are able to do this, are our Rebbes, Hasidish Rebbes. People go to the Hasidish Rebbe to get a bracha, but generally so that he looks in your eyes and he tells you your fortune. Lahabdil. But he tells you something. And the Hasidim, quite honestly, are I think, some of the luckiest people in the world. Because they don't have to do much thinking for themselves. And I don't mean to say this negatively, but that's the truth. The Rebbe tells them, the Rebbe Gazok. My mother once told me that she had my mother used to be principal of a yeshiva, Olav HaShalom, the Yeshiva Bell Harbor, which unfortunately doesn't exist after Hurricane Sandy. And in the Yeshiva Bell Harbor comes a student once who was a Lubavitcher, clearly a Lubavitcher kid. And my mother said when she was interviewing the kid and the family, she says, can I ask you a question? You know, you came all the way here from 770. Why exactly are you here? So she takes out a sheet of paper and she says, we opened up the phone book. I'm not kidding. And we wrote down all of the names of all the yeshivas. And we went to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe pointed to your yeshiva. My mother's like, really? You sure didn't point to the one on top? Because that's a Lubavitch yeshiva. It's amazing. So I've had the kavod of going to a number of Hasidish Rabbeim. And needless to say, knowing who I am, you know, because I like to tell stories, none of these experiences went very well in my life. So I want to tell you about two of them. Maybe the opposite of looking into my soul. Although one, you might, Taina, was exactly on target. The first one was one of my first meetings ever with the Hasidish Rebbe was the famous Tosha Rebbe. The Tosha Rebbe is a Rebbe in Montreal, which I think is in Canada. And so the Tosha Rebbe, you know, it's like the guys say, oh, wait, you live in Toronto? I'm going to be in Montreal next week. Why don't you come down and see me? What was it, like 30-minute drive? So we were at a wedding of a close friend of mine at the time. Now I don't have any friends, but at the time. And this close friend was telling us, you know, you're here anyway. The wedding hall is but a 45-minute drive from the town of Tosh. Town of Tosh is in Montreal, in the middle of absolutely nowhere, only hicks all around them. I'm not really sure why. I mean, I guess maybe I know why. They decided to live amongst no Jews. And they have this big town that they live in. In any case, so we decide to go. We try to call. Somebody got the name of one of the Gabayim. Anyways, you know, after a wedding, labor to cut, we got there, we got lost, of course. We pull over at a gas station, and they won't talk to us because we were talking English in Montreal. They only talk French. So I was trying all the French that I know, French fries and French toast, and nothing's getting through to them. Finally, after this goes on for mamish 20 minutes, the guy, we're trying to speak French, nothing will go. Finally, the guy looks at us and speaks perfect New York English. And he's like, listen, the law over here is I'm not really allowed to talk to you in English, but let me tell you where you need to go. We're like, dude, 20 minutes, what happened? Fine. So we get to Tosh. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 2 o'clock in the morning now. We get there, and we go in to see the Rebbe. And, of course, we get stopped by the Gabbai. He's like, what are you doing? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. The Rebbe just finished davening mincha. So this was actually true. If you know the Tosh the Rebbe, he has different times for davening. So he's like, no, you can't go. You can't go. Now, this is not part of the story, but I just make it exciting. This is true. The Tosha Rebbe's Gabbai says, fine, I'll let you in only one condition. You need to take me to town I need to buy lotto tickets. I promise you. The jackpot this week is 23 million Canadian dollars, which is like, I don't know, $6. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, I don't know. So we take him in the car, and I was the guy in the car. So now we're all, as it was, I think we were overloading the car. So now it's like there's six guys in the back seat of the car, and we're talking to this, what should we say to him, whole thing? And I said the stupidest thing, but I thought it was quite funny, so I'll do anything for a line. I said, can I ask you a question? Did the Rebbe give you the numbers? Because if the Rebbe gave you the numbers, I'll buy that ticket too. I mean, the Rebbe knows. So he looked at me and he was very upset. He goes, actually, I'm buying 10 tickets. So then I continued my joke. I said, why would you buy 10 tickets? If the Rebbe tells you all the numbers, you just get one ticket and that's it, you win. I don't understand. So he's like, maybe you shouldn't go and speak to the Rebbe. In any case, we did get to go into the Rebbe. Now it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we all wait online. So it happened to be, it was a wedding in my days in Yeshiva University. So it was turning around that all of a sudden it was becoming more of a black hat type of place. And I refused. So I was the guy wearing my nice, used to wear a real nice kippah sugah, you know, with the different colors on it. And all the other guys happened to be wearing black hats because that's what they wear in Shabbos. So it was me, the shkatz, with all these black hat guys. So the Rebbe was giving each of them a bracha. The bracha was in Yiddish, and there was a guy right next to him. Every word he was saying, he was translating to us in English. So I'm waiting online, and the first guy goes, and he gives him a bracha. You should be zeichet to find a shidduch, and you should build a bais, and be Yisrael, and you should build a whole thing. Next, and basically he's giving exactly the same bracha. You should be zeichet to find a shidduch, you should build a bais, and be Yisrael, you should become a big Talmud Chacham. Fuck. Shkoyach, great, very nice. Okay, worth our money. So we get, and then they get to me. And the Rebbe looks at me, and he says, you should be zeichet to marry somebody from. Which I did. He's unbelievable. Wow, how do you know? I married a frum girl. So I was very upset. I was like, the whole ride home, the Nebuchadnezzar, the guys that were in the car, I was like, why would he say that to me? Oh, come on, I don't know, you know. So speaking about my anger problem, so the next Rebbe I went to was Baruch Hashem, I was married already. There's a Rebbe in Brooklyn called the Kalva Rebbe. Unbelievable Rav. Right? Everybody who's ever gone to the Kalva Rebbe is very, very special. You could just see, look in his eyes, his beautiful blue eyes. Anyway, so my friend says to me, you got to go to the Kalva Rebbe, you got to go to the Kalva Rebbe, you got to go. I said, dude, I don't go to no rabbis anymore. I had a bad experience. He says, no, you got to go. He told me a story that happened to a friend of his. He swears it happened for sure. It was in the National Enquirer. It has to be true. It happened. And he says, oh, you have to go. And he told me the story. And the story was an unbelievable story. Not for now. And I said, okay, I'll go. So I go to the Kalva Rebbe. So I go to the Kalva Rebbe. And anybody's ever been to the Kalva Rebbe, he sits you down, holds your hand, strokes your hand, looks inside your eyes and pierces inside. Pierces. He's going to get it. And he says to me, wow, you have unbelievable koichas. You have unbelievable koichas. He says, you should use your koichas to be Marbitz Toyer. You should be the whole thing, right? I'm like, yeah, that's right. Baby. He goes, but one thing. And he's stroking me. And then he holds my hand and he squeezes it. You have too much anger inside of you. You have too much anger. And I was like, what? Anger? Well, pretty happy guy. He says, you got to control the anger. So then I was already upset. I'm like, okay, Shkai, goodbye. Fine. So I go downstairs to my friend, and my friend says to me, "New, tell me what happened." I said, the whole thing's a joke, whatever. He looked inside of me, he told me the whole thing, yeah. And he told me I have an anger problem. He said, what? He told you have an anger problem? Hartsy, you got an anger problem. You got an anger problem. And then, of course, I'll do anything for a joke. I go, what are you talking about? I have an anger problem. What, are you an idiot? I don't have an anger problem. And he's like, yes, you do. Look like I go, what are you talking about? I don't have an anger problem. And I'm being so angry with him. And he's like, "You, the rabbit knows, the rabbit. And I'm like, dude, I was just kidding. Yeah. Okay, so maybe he was right. Maybe I have a little bit of an anger problem. Could ask my kids. So, no, maybe I do. And my wife. But the point is, what I'm trying to get across, is that each of us do have, excuse me for saying, we all have our problems. And we all know them better than anybody else. But what I will not accept is a guy that comes up to me and says, Rebbe, I can't be anything. Because I have a learning disability. I was diagnosed with ADHD, RPY, PSP. You know? It's a good one, by the way. Good medicine. So, and I can't. Well, it's a potion. I can't. Right? I remember when I was in school. I was in school once. I think I was a very good kid. Except, you know, we didn't have these ADHD things in my day. But I was definitely a slower student. And I remember it like yesterday, not tomorrow, but yesterday. The teacher, I always remember it. And if I ever see the teacher, it happens to be it was a woman, but it would be mutter for me, Alf Nagia, I want to punch her in the face. Because it killed me, it killed me. She decided that I wasn't doing well, was in math. Math was not a, I mean, I do the finances of the yeshiva. So, they have calculators now, so it's fine. So, she decided, she said, let me see, maybe the math test is too hard for you. I'm going to give you your own special math test. Right? Meaning it was the same, but it wasn't as long. It was, you know, this was fifth grade. There's questions, 2 plus 2, 2 minus 2. Yeah. Anyway, she was right. I did very well on the test. And she realized that it was timing was too long. That wasn't, she didn't give me, she didn't give me a first grade. So she hands out the tests, and she used to have this thing, I can remember this, fifth grade, that if you got over a 90, which in my humble opinion is you shouldn't do this, but if you got over 90, she bought you a big chocolate bar. Right? In those days, 100 grand. So for now, weeks and weeks and weeks, I wasn't close to getting a chocolate bar, if you know what I mean. All my tests together wouldn't get me a chocolate bar. And now, all of a sudden, on this test, so she calls me out and she says, and now, for the first time getting a chocolate bar, is Daniel Hartstein. He got a 98 on his special test. Because he's, you know, and all the kids looked at him, Hartstein, did you get the special test? You know, and I felt, I remember until today, I felt horrible. And that 98 all of a sudden became a nothing. Because all the guys, it was basically the same test, except it had less questions on it. And I could tell you, and I went through my life and said, maybe Baruch Hashem, I have an amazing parents, but specifically an amazing mother, who kept pushing me and said, stop it already. You can do it. What are you doing? Were you going to be nothing? What, you can do it. Okay, she used to write my book reports. Fine. But my first college paper that I wrote was international business. And so this was the first time I really had to do my own work. And so I read a whole report. I remember I was bringing iced tea to China. I don't know. That was the project I was given. And I made this wonderful cover because my mom used to always make great covers. So I wanted to, you know, Simul Abana. And I got a C- on it. And he wrote me, you're no longer in high school. You don't need covers, man. That's what it said. That was it, Baruch Hashem. Then on I realized how to play the game. But I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think I accomplished a lot in life. And I think the Baruch Hashem, but it was through difficulty. And that's what we see with each of the brothers. Each bracha that they're given is specific to who they are. And you can't spend your year in self-degradation of yourself and saying, I can't, who am I going to be? I'm going to be a Talmud Chacham, stop it. It's a joke. Because you can. You know, they always give the list. You know, the Albert Einsteins, right, who was diagnosed with dyslexia. And the Rockefeller. And all these amazing people. Right? And Albert Einstein, where would we be today? Right? And some of it, by the way, is another thing, which is, I think, even worse than anything else. And that's a medical term called laziness. And laziness is probably the biggest difficulty. And many boys talk about it. I don't come to, and it's very honest, I don't come to Minyan because I'm partial lazy. I'm lazy. I was allowed to be lazy because in school they let me be lazy. I'm lazy. I'm a lazy guy. Could be the smartest guy in the world. He's lazy. You got to get out of the laziness. It's interesting, when we start the parashos, when we're going to be starting now, Parashat Shemos. So right away we learn about Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was a gadol, he became a gadol, it says. We say it every bris. Zeh katan gadol yeh. It's a little bit of a chutzpah, if you think about it. When we talk about gadol, we talk about gedolim. Who are the gedolim? The gedolim cards, right? Who are the great gedolim of the time? And we call a baby, and we see in this parashah, we call Moshe Rabbeinu, according to some, you know, he was 13 then, but he was a gadol. We know Moshe later on would be called Moshe Rabbeinu, he'd be the gedolim sheb gedolim. But why would you call a baby zeh katan gadol yeh? That he's going to be a gadol. So says Rav Shimon Shkap. Shimon Shkap, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva in Europe, later came for a 1-year stint, so just so we could say that he taught in YU. He's a Rebbe in YU. Rosh Hashiva and YU. Rosh Shimon Shkop says that's exactly it. It's all about potential. Right when we name the baby, we say, Zeh Koton Godel Yeh. He's now a baby? Mamish a baby? What's what I mean by a baby? Maybe like all of us are sometimes. Right? I have more than one baby in my house. But two right now, one who's three who thinks he's 3 months, and one who's 14 months who still thinks he's 3 months. So when a baby says, ooh, I'm hungry, what does a baby do? Cries. Mommy, mommy! Baruch Hashem, they never say Abba. Baruch Hashem. Crying, crying. I said to my wife all the time, I said, I would get him, but he's calling for you. What can I do? Right? Because they don't care. He's a katan. He doesn't understand. Godel Yeh. He'll be somebody that will think about other people. He'll say, wait a minute, I know what my potential is. How did we define godless Moshe Rabbeinu? What happens to find him as a godel? He cares. This guy's wearing the war. This guy's the man. He could be to the throne of... he's a prince. He's wearing the star clothes. And he goes out and he says, Shem Hashem, and kills somebody. And he says that the Midrash tells us that he went out every morning and helped people with bricks, making bricks. In the royal garb. He cared. That's a gadol. That's godless. But I think godless is also about yourself. Realizing, yes, on one hand, it's not all about me, but I have to start, there has to be a starting point, like a baby, that it is all about me. That I have to become someone great so that I could be a gadol. So that I could be a Moshe Rabbeinu. If you know stories about all the gedolim, the true gedolim were ones who cared so much about other people. And the stories are unbelievable. Stories about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that Rav Shlomo Zalman, when his wife, Nebuch, was pronounced dead, and he's in the hospital, and a bacher runs up to him and says, Rebbe, I just had a baby! Rav Shlomo Zalman hugs him and says, oh, Mazel, smiling and so excited. And his son says, your wife just died, how can you do that? So we actually, from this week's parasha too, and he says, what am I going to do? He says, my facial expressions are Rishus HaRabim. What I feel inside is Rishus HaYachid. I'm crying inside. But I'm going to make this guy feel like, you know, we've had this before, right? You go up to the person and you say, you know, your mother's a good piano player. You know the joke, right? He says, my mother, what do you mean? She lost all of her fingers and, you know, right? Just make someone feel bad. So we try not to make someone feel bad and say, right, it's godless. So in order to become that gadol, we have to have this element about ourselves. They tell a story about the Chafetz Chaim, which I'm taking out of context, because he interprets it a different way, but I like the story. The story is that a king, they're making him a new crown, and the center jewel comes from a faraway country, hundreds of thousands of dollars, says the Chafetz Chaim, and they notice that it has a little scratch on it. So they go to all the jewelers, everybody who could work on it, to do something to make it perfect. It's going to go the center of the crown. And every jeweler comes back, nothing. They can't do anything. So, like a good Chafetz Chaim story, they go to the jeweler's jeweler, and he says, I have a great idea. And with the scratch, he writes the initials of the king. So now, when he wears that central thing, it has his initials on it. We're all diamonds. Some of us are scratched a bit. But with that scratch, we have to write our initials. And say, okay, but this is the way I am. This is good. This is good. I'm going to use my anger to be angry for Torah. To scream at guys and say, come on, guys, don't dismiss yourself. I'm lazy. I'm learning to dismiss. Stop it. If Albert Einstein did that, Thomas Edison, others. It's enough. This is, when I went to yeshiva, I was always told, your year's almost over. That's it. It's done. It's over. Zit dumb. Right? A few weeks from now. Almost, you know, next week's going to bench Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Shvat leads into Adar. That's it. Adar, then you have, that's it. So the year's over after Adar. Purim, that's a few weeks later, is Pesach. And you come back for a few weeks. This is it. Stop making excuses. I'm this, I'm that, can, oh my teachers told me I'm going to be nothing, shkoyach, you're done. Forget about it. It's over. What's the key? The key is one thing. And this will end. The key is realizing that the Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who's going to help you along the way. I am helped through the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Rebbe's in the yeshiva are helped. I'm not saying you shouldn't go to your Rebbe. But the key is that. The key is having absolute trust and bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And saying, I was given a diamond, I'm a diamond, it's flawed a little bit, says the Chavetz Chaim. But it has my initials on it. I could write my initials on it. And I'll be the most amazing person in the world. And with all that, you get to be great gedolim. We spoke about a number of years ago with Nosson Zvi Finkel, the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. And the many articles, when he passed away, wrote about, in spite of the fact that he had such a modern background, he went to Ida Crown Nebuch, you know, he still became one of the great gedolim. And I say, no. The article was written wrong. Because of the fact that he understood people and he went to Ida Crown and he lived in that world, he had the largest yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, people were late to him. Hopefully every day we say an Adon Olam for those that say it. It's in the beginning of Davin. Yeah, it's before Yishtaba. So we say the last part. We say the Imruchi, Kviyasi, Hashem li velo ira. If we believe inside, in our body, that we believe the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have no fear in the world. Last night, one of my focal points, when Shabbos is over, it's so sad, at least in my house, it's sad, school's tomorrow, you know. So I always scream out the first part. Hine kel ishuasi eftach velo evcha. It's a new week. But I believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore I'm not going to be fearful. Rav Schwab says that this is the true relationship we have with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's true bitachon. You want to be a true tzaddik? He says, al tzaddikim, what do we say? V'chol aboitchim b'shimcha b'emes. Those that believe in Hashem, b'emes, not the fake fear that you could say to me now, I have no fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I have no fear, not of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I have no fear because I'm Ribbono Shel Olam is with me all the time. And all of a sudden he hears a sign, I'm scared, I'm so scared. I'm not saying you shouldn't be scared. And I'm not saying you shouldn't come to the year and be scared that there's a shas and there's poiskim and there's things you have to learn. But you have to have emuna. V'lo yira. That's the true emuna, says Rav Schwab. So stop it. Stop with your excuses. Stop telling me that you're this and I'm lazy and that's why I can't be better and I'm taking this medication and this and I have this disease and that. I don't care. Stop already. Take the diamond the Ribbono Shel Olam gave you, carve out your name on it, and enough already. Because if not, as we started, Yaakov Avinu saw, the Or Chaim HaKadosh tells us, the greatness in everybody. And he knew which... Okay, so maybe you won't be the fireman that you thought you were going to be. Maybe you could be this and that. The yeshiva just made a video, which will be coming out shortly, a promo for the dinner. And an amazing thing, a few second clip in there is all the places, all the great positions in Jewish communal life that our alumni have. You're going to start to see, as you've seen already, alumni starting to come the next few weeks, not only because they stay here for free, but because they love the yeshiva and they want to come back. Because hopefully we've helped them become heads of Hillel houses. We've helped them become valedictorians. We've helped them, yeah, because they realize their potential. And despite maybe what people told them, I'm going to push myself. This is it. If you don't push yourself now, the year's over. Realize the diamonds the Ribbono Shel Olam gave you and have bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam that if you try hard, you're going to be the best people in the world. Have a great day.
There's two quick things. The doctor is right now.